Welcome to It's a Dog's Life. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host Greg Cleva, who had this show for years on Sirius XM Radio and now is here with me on Radio Pet Lady Network. Together we'll help you with any issues you have in living a safe and fun life with your pooch. Call us with any questions you have about your dog's behavior or training. Our number is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Give us a call. We'd like to thank our sponsors and let you know we've invited these companies to be here because we believe in them and use them ourselves. Please show your appreciation for their support by becoming a customer yourself. And Whole Life Pet will send you a free sample box of freeze-dried protein treats for dogs and cats if you send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com. There's a whole week's worth of wonderful live pet shows I co-host on our own Radio Pet Lady network. Go to radiopetlady.com to see the whole schedule. This show is a production of Eight Paws LLC and Golden Bulldog Inc., which are solely responsible for its content. That number again is 888-429-5471. We'd love to hear from you. And I am so excited. It's Greg. It's a Dog's Life, the guy who was always on the night after me on Sirius. And now you're here on Radio Pet Lady Network. I know that all of the people that adored you must have been salivating, wondering where will he surface again. So I just want to say I am so thrilled to have you here, Greg. You are a voice of reason in a very confusing and complicated world of dog training. And I just want to give you a chance to say hi to all those people that love you and miss you. And welcome to your very own show all over again.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be back on the air. And yes, I'm sure my listeners must have thought I had crawled under a rock somewhere. But, you know, following my little brief hiatus, you know, here at my new home on the airwaves at the Radio Pet Lady Network, thank you so much to you, Tracy, for giving me the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
I could not, Greg. You had so many people that were really depending on you to help them through their dog problems. You know, people do get really stressed about living with their dogs and the challenges, and to have someone that they could turn to for all those years that would hold their hand, you know, through the bad times, like Marianne from Brooklyn. She's already here. Let me tell you guys the number again. It's 888-429-5471. You want to say hi to your beloved Greg? You got a question? You just want to kiss him all over? Give us a call. Marianne, welcome to It's a Dog's Life.
I want to cry. I want to thank you, Greg. Welcome back. I'm so glad. You have no idea how much we missed you, me and Max and everybody else. I don't have a question today, but I just want to tell you, without you, the last 5 years, I couldn't have survived with Max. You made it so great for us.
Well, thank you, Mary. And I'm glad to be back. It's a pleasure. And, you know, this is a great platform, just like my platform previously to help dog owners like you, just nurture the best possible relationship with their pets. So I'm sorry that you've missed me. I'm glad that you've missed me. But and I'm ecstatic to be back and helping you out. So continuing to help people like yourself and your adorable little Maxie out. I can't wait to continue this journey.
Marianne,
this is
the
best news. I mean, I could ask you a question, but I don't even know if I should on the first show. Should I?
Oh, you can, but first I want you to explain. There's a lot of listeners that may not have known what your story was with Max, and they'd probably like to know why you love Greg so much and why you listen to It's a Dog's Life so much, and what did he do for you, like in a nutshell?
Well, in a nutshell, Max was a beautiful puppy from a big mistake from a pet shop, and from the, you know, spoiled him, you know, beyond. And every other week there was another thing, whether it be barking or his ears or, you know, numerous different things. And just listening to the other callers and their complaints and or their problems and about the food without the cereal. I mean, I can name a million things, you know, and I could probably call Greg every day with another Maxie problem. But not that it's a problem or just like something in my mind that I want to, you know, see if it's correct. So I don't know. And I'm obsessed with my dog, and he's obsessed with me, and I'm obsessed with Greg. So,
well, good. It sounds like a perfect triangle, Greg. This is what a dog trainer wants in life, to have people attached to you by a leash. What you can ask him,
Greg,
a question,
should I,
Marianne,
tell you what he's doing now?
Sure. Yeah, what? Go ahead. Greg can answer anything.
Okay, so now, Greg, he's out when I walk him twice a day because he's mostly a backyard dog. Greg knows that. He makes his duty, and then he has to make pee-pee on top of it. I know. Is that crazy?
Well, first of all, what kind of dog is Maxie?
He's a little Maltese. He's 10 pounds. He's mostly a house dog, and he's absolutely beautiful.
He's the most handsome Maltese you've ever laid your eyes on.
Right.
Seriously. Would you say that to all the Maltese, Greg?
No, never.
No, it's true. It's true. He's got the perfect Maltese nose. He doesn't have the long snoot. He has the shorter one. And I groom him every 2 weeks, and he's snow white.
Nice. All right, so explain about the peeing on top of the poo.
Yeah, I mean, very simply, he's either trying to cover up the scent of his poop, or you know, sometimes when dogs smell where they've gone to the bathroom before, or where other dogs have gone to the bathroom, that'll stimulate the need for them to have to toilet themselves. So it's hard to say to necessarily reason why he's going on top of his poop, but it could be to cover up the scent. It could be just because that's where he's standing at the moment. It's really hard to say.
I would say it's
you know
a
what,
double
Greg? He does it
Greg.
Even on the wee-wee pit and in the backyard, almost like he has to, like, top it off with a cherry. I know it sounds crazy, but you know me, so.
Well, I would say that it's a marking thing because a lot of dogs mark. And, you know, your poop has a certain kind of marker on it, but your pee is, like, the really good one. And my dog's, it's like the last one to pee rules the roost. So first one pees, then the other one pees on top of that, and then the third one is the oldest one. He gets to be the last over peer. So he's probably just saying, here's a poop, and by the way, I'm going to piss on that.
Yeah, when I've got many dogs in my house, I'll sometimes with you know, watching families and friends' dogs, I'll have as many as five dogs in my house at a time, and it's like a revolving door. One goes out, and the rest of them are lined up. Hey, we need to go out there and mark over what he just did.
Yeah, so that's probably why, Marianne, but we're thrilled to have you listening.
Oh, so it's pretty normal then. Max isn't, you know, as neurotic as I think he is.
So, Marianne,
Greg, welcome back. Welcome back. With my heart, I love you, and I'm so happy you're on the air. You have no idea.
Love you, Marianne.
That is adorable of you. Marianne, I want you to send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com so you can get some whole life pet treats for Max, okay? Send me your mailing address.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having Greg. And you have a whole bunch of, a whole new family, pet lady, a whole new family.
Nice, nice. That's adorable.
Take care. Thank you, Greg. Love you.
It must be good to be missed and loved like that. I'm thinking that's pretty sweet.
That makes a guy feel pretty good.
It does, actually. Yeah, very nice. Those of you who have never met Greg but have a dog behavior or training question that's been burning a hole in your brain, here's the number to call, 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Greg is in Paramus, New Jersey, Bergen County, and he has lots of dog training customers there. But if you live anywhere at all in the whole universe, we're on the internet now, right? So someone could call us theoretically from Antarctica. You can ask Greg a question. Greg, people, I think, have a kind of distorted idea about dog training and dog trainers because of the television set.
Yes.
I wonder if you talk a little bit about myself. I think that someone like Cesar Millan is not necessarily a dog trainer. He's an entertainer. The way the man at the circus is called a lion tamer or a tiger wrangler. They're not really training. They're entertaining people with a bunch of, like, I don't know, smoke and mirrors.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
To me, that's like just an entertainment. But what worries me is that people might think that's actually good advice. So talk about how hard it may be for you to deal with dogs with problems and people with misconceptions when they come to you as a trainer and you have to, like, unteach them.
Yeah, you know, dog training is funny. I promise you that on It's a Dog's Life here, I'm going to offer some information or advice that someone will inevitably disagree with. There are a lot of different methods of training that exist out there. Methods have changed. Things have come and gone. There are various schools of thought about what's right and what's wrong about training dogs. And, you know, even dog trainers can't agree. There's this old joke in dog training. If you put four dog trainers in a kennel, they won't be able to agree on the color of the poop in the middle of the floor. So, you know, I always feel bad for dog owners. It's got to be confusing because people struggle with how to understand how to get their dogs to behave, and they get so many mixed messages from the next-door neighbor, from how they trained a dog previously, from their family, from these TV dog trainers. There's so much conflicting and contradictory advice about how to educate dogs. We're exposed to this whole spectrum of dog training methods, and it really can be confusing.
One of the things that I notice, there's two different schools of TV dog trainers.
Yes.
And they're both attractive, and it's all about a drama, you know, like a soap opera almost. Oh my God, you come in the house and the dog's biting and the husband and the son and the wife sitting on the couch rather liking it kind of thing. And then the trainer is supposed to fix this drama, this soap opera. But both Victoria Stilwell, who seems to be on the other end of the spectrum from Cesar Millan, and Cesar Millan, it seems to be that they come into houses and they kind of scold the people a lot. Now, I can't imagine that you, making a living as a dog trainer, go in and the first thing you do is scold the people, right?
Many dog trainers do, and I hear about them. And you're right. You know, people don't like that. But you know, we're talking yeah, believe it or not, people don't like to be scolded. Or you know, I hate that old adage.
Hate to be scolded.
Yeah, I hate that old adage. There's no such thing as a bad dog. There's only a bad dog owner. Well, they're not really bad dog owners. They're misinformed.
And they're not really bad dogs. They're dogs doing dog-like things. In
exactly.
times and places you'd prefer them not to, and you don't know how to manage it because
exactly. And you, but you're right. You know, you've got these TV dog trainers. Cesar Millan is what I would call a hard trainer. He'll grab the dog, he'll poke the dog, he'll kick at the dog. Kind of an old school militaristic style of dog training, right? It's called alpha rolling. He's going to physically dominate that dog to let that dog know, hey, you better listen to me.
Well, in fact, I just want to mention that there were these guys, and their first book was written before you were – when you were still in diapers, I think, The Monks of Newskeet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What was it called? How to Be Your Dog's Best Friend? I think it was actually called that, strangely enough.
Right.
And it was written by the Monks of Newskeet, who are in Newskeet, New York, where they also now sell frozen cheesecakes, I noticed, in my refrigerator. So I think – is this what comes out of Newskeet? Monks that train dogs and very expensive cheesecakes. I didn't even think it was that good of a cheesecake for all that money. I know that's off topic, but it's just weird. Newskeet, well, I've never heard of it before. But when I was a girl, I read this book, and it was a very peculiar setting. It was not like your regular home. The monks lived in isolation. In a very rural isolation, and they were non-speaking. What do you call that when monks have to be vows of silence?
Right.
So here we are, silent. And they were breeding these German shepherds themselves, so it was their own breeding stock. And part of the advice that was in the book, that was in print even until I wrote the dog Bible, so we're talking not that long ago, was that with a dog that wasn't doing what you wanted, and I don't know how physically – you're a big guy, but I don't know how you'd even do this – you were to put a choke chain on your German Shepherd or your Maltese, if you're Marianne, and hold it up by the neck.
Right, hanging the dog.
Hanging the dog. And guess what? That would show the dog who's boss, and that'll correct the problem. Well, somebody told them that was politically incorrect in, you know, like 1990-something. So they cleaned up that act in the book, and now there's no more hanging the dog. But as you point out, old ideas and old habits die hard and only died recently. And I think attitudes may still be in that place.
Yeah,
right?
But honestly, they haven't completely died. They're still out there. And again, you know, Cesar Millan is a perfect example. I don't want to sound like I'm disparaging Cesar Millan. I actually like what Cesar Millan says. This guy, you know, anybody that knows him, he's got an enormous following. He's beloved. They mm-hmm. absolutely adore him. What he says makes a ton of sense as far as I'm concerned. What
yes.
he does, on the other hand, I'm not particularly crazy about. So
right.
He's kind of on that end of the spectrum, like I said, that I would consider a harder method of dog training. I don't necessarily like what he does because I don't really think that it nurtures a healthy, trusting relationship between dog and owner.
Or even between dog and dog. I remember I looked at almost a year and a half of them. I recorded them, look at them, fast forward through the commercials, and I watched the progression of a little of this drama, holding dogs down, squirting dogs with hoses, to there was one episode, and then I stopped watching because honestly, what he was doing was upsetting me a lot. I thought,
sure,
like they say, don't try this at home, but this is not a race car. This is a living, feeling animal, and it's not like don't try this stunt with your car at home. These were stunts. Two English bulldogs, which people think of bulldogs as so sweet, but really the breeding is to grab a giant bull by the nose and hold it there till it gives up and bleeds, and then your other friend, English bulldog, kills it from, you know, degutting it or something. It's a
right.
tough breed. So there's two English bulldogs living together, and they would go after each other in this full-on dogfight. Looked like dog fighting 101. So he was holding them upside down by the throat, flipped them over on their back, and you could see from the whites of their eyes, these dogs were just waiting for another chance to kill each other. This
right.
was just raising their level of aggression. So like you say, it not only didn't solve a problem, it may even have made it worse. People watching it think, I'm going to show the dog who's who. But But there's no trust there, and you don't solve
it. Exactly. And no matter how many times they flash that up on the screen, do not try this at home without the help of a professional trainer. Not that I think you should do that either.
Right.
Every home I walk into, people are doing the Caesar Milan and poking the dog in the neck or pinning the dog down.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. It's if you – you know, Caesar Milan can kind of go in there. He knows what he needs to do with which particular dogs. I'm not condoning what he does by any means. However, he knows the personality of that dog and what will or will not, let's say, work in that particular situation.
For TV.
It'll
give him a result for TV in that moment.
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
That moment.
What's going to happen in that house 2 weeks later when that owner
that's
goes
right.
to pin that dog down and that dog goes, oh, no, you don't.
That's
I'm not
right.
going to take that from you.
That's right. And in fact, we have to go to a break, but I remember one distinctly in which there was like a close-up of him getting bitten and he wanted some blood sport for himself. It was a small dog, kind of puppy mill Maltese-looking dog, although Marianne's is beautiful, Max. And he went and the dog was terrified of being groomed. No problem but grooming. Now, you and I, well, when we come back from the break, let's talk about what would happen if you adopt a dog from a shelter and the dog is wonderful about everything except for being brushed or having scissors put on it. Let's you and I talk about like
Great.
A rational, reasonable way to deal with that, and then I'll tell you what Caesar did. And everyone can vote. Y'all can write in or call in. You can, in fact, call in right now and tell us, what do you think about that? 888-429-5471. We're going off for a break. The marvelous Greg Kleva, It's a Dog's Life, and I are going to be right back. This show is supported by Platinum Performance Canine Wellness Formula, which is a comprehensive nutritional foundation formula for all dogs, which addresses canine health at the cellular level, providing a special blend of more than 55 nutrients that improves the fundamental health of each of your dog's 12 trillion cells. Healthy cells mean a healthy dog. That's the Platinum difference. Platinum Performance Canine Wellness is a supplement scientifically proven to improve the cognitive ability of dogs in a study designed to measure their learning ability. When the dogs were tested on how well they remembered the skills learned in the first phase, dogs on Platinum Performance demonstrated superior memory by completing the task more quickly than the control group. To give your dog that mental edge, especially as she ages, go to RadioPetLady.com to get free samples and learn more. And there's Platinum Feline Formula for the kitties, too. Support for the show comes from Waruva, a family-owned company that makes canned food for cats and little dogs from ingredients we could eat ourselves. Because they think dogs and cats should eat as well as we do, so their foods are made in a human food facility. We salute Waruva's ethical decision to make no dry food because they know that for optimal wellness, small dogs don't need highly processed carbohydrates, and that true health for cats, who are obligate carnivores, means they should eat only meat and have no need for carbohydrates in their diet. In addition to all the delicious Waruva recipes, they also make Cats in the Kitchen in pouches and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brand, using smaller-bodied fish for your cat's health. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites. Vectra 3D has the newest technology. In scientific tests, Vectra 3D was shown to create a shield on your dog's skin to repel ticks and kill them fast and reliably for the entire month, unlike older products which don't last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, a bite which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases even without the parasite staying attached. With Vectra 3D, ticks are killed just by coming into contact with your dog, but it's still safe for the people in your family. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that repels and kills fleas and also kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. I am back with Greg Kleva. It's a Dog's Life. We are so thrilled to be here together on Radio Pet Lady Network. If you want to join us, if you have a question for Greg, or you just want to say, hey, as they say in some parts of the country, hey, Greg, great to have you back. Miss you so much because all those years on Sirius XM, he does have a devoted following. The number is 888-429-5471. So, Greg, I'll set out the scenario for you, and then you tell me, what would Caesar do? No, I'll tell you at the end what Caesar did. I'll say, what would you do? And even what would Victoria Stilwell do if we're going to talk about this pendulum of the all yes. positive and too rough? And maybe sometimes you might do what Victoria Stilwell in your imagination might do. So the footage on the Caesar Milan show was of this small dog that was fine until the woman came near him with a brush. Now, meanwhile, the dog was in like gross shape hair-wise. It was kind of matted. So my guess is that the brushing really felt bad. And the dog was panicky, and she kept at it with the brush, and it was panicky, and it kind of seemed to turn on her, like growling, showing teeth, but she kept on at it. And then Caesar elected to take a huge pair of shears, not dog-safe shears, not with a blunt tip, and went right at the eye area of the dog where it had an overhanging hair. Now, you can imagine what the result was. I'll save that punchline till later, but I kind of already gave it away. What would you do if the client said, I just adopted a dog and I can't in any way groom this dog? What would you come in and do? What would the advice be and what would you physically do?
Yeah, I mean, look, listeners to It's a Dog's Life here are going to find out that I'm not a rough-em-up physical domination dog trainer. I'm also not, on the other end of that spectrum, the softy, positive-only clicker and treat-based trainer like you see Victoria Stilwell. I'm very much in the middle. You know, my listeners will hear me bang them over the heads with the phrase, see things from your dog's perspective. And this is a perfect example of what must this poor little animal think
yes.
about this situation. Again, you mentioned I saw this episode as well. They were
Did
ridiculously
you?
Enormous scissors. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it was like absurd. It was like the circus. It was like clown scissors.
It would be like huge yes. garden shears
yes.
for trimming a bush coming at your neck. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Poor.
You would run. You know, dogs, yes. they're animals. They have fight or flight mentality.
Yes.
When a dog does not have the opportunity to flee when it's being quote unquote attacked from its perspective, when it's under
yes.
threat from its perspective, it's going to fight. Not because
yes.
it's a vicious dog, not because it hates the person who's trying to help it. And the dog can't rationalize that. Okay, you're trying to help me. You're going to take this pain away from these knots that are in my fur that are pulling at the skin and causing
right.
Discomfort.
Right.
So,
right.
So, you know, as humans, we go, you know, why won't this dog cooperate? I'm trying to help it. Well, your dog doesn't see it like that. So, you know, that's the angle that I take
yes.
is that, okay, let's look at this from this dog's perspective. Let's go slow. Let's
yes,
take this one absolutely. Step at a time and let's change the dog's perspective. This should not be a situation that creates fear. Let's make this a situation where the dog goes, I love when this happens, or at least I'm going to tolerate when this happens.
Yes, yes.
So how do you do that? You do it by kind of leaning towards that Victoria Stilwell end of the pendulum
yes.
or the spectrum
yes.
by creating positive association. So rather than roughing the dog up and holding it down and going, we're going to get this done whether you like it or not.
Right.
You're going to submit to me and let me do this to you. You know, you go, hey, look, let me show you these scissors. You know, it's
yes.
a slow process of desensitization.
Yes.
Here's the scissors. When the dog starts to panic, you know, you just kind of ignore it, make it nonchalant. And when the dog, you know, starts to show a little bit of interest, throw some treats down on the floor.
Yes.
Smear some peanut butter on the scissors.
Yes.
Let the dog
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
I'm not crazy about those scissors, but you know what? They're
they
kind of cool because these cookies are falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
And if that's all,
and the scissors taste like peanut butter. Miraculous.
Exactly. If that's all I get done for the first couple of days.
I love it. I love
it. Then that's it. That's as far as I get. If I can then take those scissors the next day and maybe pet the dog with the scissors, just stroke
Absolutely
them nice and gently
right.
with the scissors, mm-hmm. touch, 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 treat,
yes.
treat, treat.
Yes.
Peanut butter in a Kong toy, in a food motivational
yep.
toy.
Yep.
Just getting the dog to go, okay, I'm not crazy about this. I'm a little sketchy with it, but all right, not so bad. Peanut butter.
Right.
I like that.
Right, right.
I'll let you touch me with those scissors. Maybe that happens for a few days. Maybe the next few days I get the scissors in there and I don't even touch the dog. I just snip the scissors in the air just so the dog hears the sound. Maybe the next day I get
yes.
to cut one knot out of the dog's hair.
Yes.
And so just it's a slow process of desensitization. I take this same approach, the same route with bathing a dog. You know, if the dog doesn't like the bathtub or runs the other direction when you turn on the water in the bathtub, same thing. Just go nice and slow, incrementally, one step at a time, and create positive associations.
I think that would be exactly what I would do. So there, I mean, we're just going to learn our way with each other. It'll be interesting to see if we have different opinions about stuff. Yours is practical. It's both learning and in the field. Mine is just my own experiences with my dogs and all the theory that I've read. So it'll be fun to see if there's situations where we might do something very differently but come out with the same result. But in this case, That would be exactly what you would do.
That's the case with dog training. That's why I don't disparage what Cesar Millan does. I don't disparage what Victoria Stilwell does. I think, and not to pump myself up here, but what I find in my own area where I train dogs is that dog trainers are very condescending in a lot of respects.
Yes.
They're very competitive with one another. Dog trainers will belittle me and my approach to dog training as a way of getting people to go, okay, we won't have Greg come help us. We'll have you come help us instead, because what you told us about him is that's a little scary.
Nice.
You know, so
nice.
So my opinion is this: whether you agree with me or disagree with me, whether we use different training methods or the same styles, at the end of the day, I might not agree that it's the best thing for that dog that you're doing, but you know what? I know you're trying to help save that dog's life. That's why we do what we do, to keep these dogs out of shelters, you know, to avoid behavioral problems that are going to cause their owners to surrender them to shelters in the first place. So at the end of the day, we're all trying to accomplish the same end result, the same goal.
Exactly, and to have them be mannerly. But I like the idea of the slow, slow, slow. When one of my dogs, when I got her from the shelter, she's a funny monkey because she has a way of expressing herself that is a growl. That's how she expresses herself. So she was relinquished twice back to the shelter, and I can see why people would have. Now, if you give her a chance, you discover that's how she vocalizes.
Right.
But she never shows her teeth or snarls, but she has this growl. It's usually to the other dogs. She's never done it to me, although she doesn't like having her collar grabbed. Anyway, she first came, her toenails were a bit long. And, you know, a lot of dogs are anxious about having their toenails cut. I think probably people are anxious about doing it, so the adrenaline flows both ways. So I try to sit on the floor with my dogs when I do it and get them to lie down and be relaxed, not to be sitting and kind of pulling away. I went to do it. She shook from head to foot. She was willing to give me her foot. She gave it to me. It was the hardest thing I think she's probably ever done in her life. But she was shaking
that
like
adrenaline. Babies.
Poor baby. So I'm sure she has very tender little nails, almost more like a cat's nails or something. So I could see how somebody could overdo it and maybe they cut the quick. So I did exactly what you said. Just put the clippers, I touched them to her toe, not open, not snapping, gave her a treat, did it over a few days, did one toenail, came back another day, did another toenail. And this was now 9 years have gone by, and it was time for all the crew to have their toenails done. So she was already lying on the bed. I go, hi, sweetie, and I come over with the clipper. She's smart as a whip. She's a collie mix. She sees it. She knows what it is. She put her little head down on the pillow and handed me her foot. It's like that's where you can get if you go slowly.
Absolutely.
You can go from sheer terror to absolute compliance. And I had dogs that after every toenail you had to give a treat.
Yeah.
Every toenail.
And, you know, this all this being said, and again, you know, that's the approach that I prefer in that situation. All this being said, there are some scenarios, there are some situations where, unfortunately, you've got to get the job done now. So you don't have the opportunity to cut one toenail a day as you're,
right,
as you're creating these positive associations. I'll use my own example. I'm a professional dog trainer, behavioral therapist, but my own dog, my own miniature pincher, is just so terrified of the process. No matter how much of this desensitization I do, it's still a tough situation for him. It's still a tough scenario for him. In situations like that, let's say, for example, you've got to take your dog to the vet, and that experience is not pleasant for the dog, but the job's got to get done then and there.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to rely on management techniques. In other words, teaching the dog to wear a muzzle. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not ideal. But if that's going to at least help a dog that's in fear, that needs to be helped and won't tolerate it any other way to get through that scenario, you know, spend time teaching your dog to wear muzzles. I like basket muzzles. I don't like muzzles that hold the mouth closed.
There's soft one. Do you know the soft one that I mean?
Yes.
You can still pant and maybe even technically drink water out of it, but it's not meant to be worn for long periods.
Right.
But it's for dogs if you wanted to take them out. I think it's you could use it at the vet, but also I think if it's dogs that are really bad out in public, because they looked really cheerful. They were made by two ladies in San Francisco, and they looked cheery. They had like cherries on them or something, but so they didn't look like a scary.
The Hannibal Lecter basket muzzles don't.
Right.
Silence of the Lambs doesn't look very nice, but the same thing. The dog can eat and drink and pant and bark everything
with
the mouth except bite.
I have one of those. Yeah, I have one. And they're actually Italian. I don't know if you ever found Made in America. For some reason, when you go to buy them online, which is the only place I've ever seen them, they say Italian basket muzzle.
Absolutely.
Because in Italy, and I don't know about some other countries in Europe, which is a whole other conversation. At some point, we should talk about Ted Carasote and his new book, Puka's Promise. The guy that wrote Merle's Door, who fantasizes about how dogs are treated in Europe, and it's so wonderful, and none of them are neutered, and they all run loose.
Yeah.
It's baloney. Dogs in Europe, the females are mostly euthanized by drowning when they're puppies, because females are considered too much trouble because they go into heat, and there are not really any euthanasia drugs, if you can believe that. Yeah, it's charming. And the dogs almost entirely are muzzled when out in public. People like big macho dogs a lot of the times. They're like little pretty dogs like yours, or they're like big macho Dobies or German Shepherds, and muzzling them in public at one point was the rule, the law. So I think that's why there's so many of those basket muzzles. I had a dog that
interesting.
Would – yeah, it is interesting because culturally it's so different, and that's in nice cities, you know, intelligent people. That's just how it goes. But I had a dog that when we would walk in the woods on the hiking path, sometimes mountain bikes would come up behind us really fast and soundlessly because it was pine needles and leaves on the ground. And he would lose it and go after them. And he got a guy in the leg. I mean, he didn't bite through and through, but he grabbed the guy's, you know, skin tight thing. So after that, I thought, I can't ever run that risk again. I see why the dog's that terrified. But
sure.
I can't – I don't know when the bicycle's coming either. So he had to wear a basket muzzle when he was on the path, and, you know, that managed it. But I knew what you were going to say about the toenails, because there are times when you have a dog who's just kind of loses it, like they almost have a screw loose, and you could just be nice and slow and sweet about it all day long. They still panic, and I had a dog like that, Billy Blue, that was a big blue Weimaraner. And I had to hold his foot and sound really crabby and really harsh and go, you just sit there. Stop that. Stop that. No. I mean, like, that's how I had to talk to him the whole time. The sweetie thing didn't work. Being that really firm, you know, like, no, you will not. You will just stop that. And then I had to give him a treat for every toenail. And by the fourth foot, he was still just a wreck. What do you do with the Minpin? Do you put a little muzzle on her?
I do. I put a muzzle on them, and you know, we go in there and we get the job done. But I also, in between, you know, those times where I have to go in and cut all of his nails, I will lay him down on a rug in the kitchen. He loves eggs and egg yolks. So,
oh, that's funny.
So that's his special treat. So I'll lay him down on the rug with a little bowl of egg yolks there. He knows what's coming, and he will let me do one nail, little egg yolk, two nails, little egg yolk. So I'm still, even though I know, okay, I can throw the muzzle on him and get the job done.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you want to educate your dog, you don't wait for the problem to arise and then try to educate, because you're rushing, your timing is off, your body language is a mess. You know, you want to recreate problem scenarios while you're prepared to educate. And I love the example that you just gave along the lines of how you dealt with your dog, because now you're talking middle of that spectrum. You're talking the pendulum stops in the middle, where we're using a balanced approach, which is what I prefer, which is what listeners will hear me talk about on this show. Again, not everyone will agree with some of the methods that I recommend. And I try to give a softer side and a more of a balanced side. But that balanced approach, where when the dog makes a mistake, you can issue a correction in a way that's firm if it needs to be, but fair for that dog's personality or temperament, and never physical, so that you don't diminish that relationship.
Yeah.
And then once you've got the dog's focus and attention, then you can educate. Now you go, okay, here's what I want you to do, and there's where you use your positive reinforcement. That's
a
good boy.
And when they give you what you want, you make a big fuss over them. You could have been severe a moment before. Okay, Doug, we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we have tons more things to discuss. Anybody that has toenail questions, not yours, your dog's, give us a call, 888-429-5471, Greg Kleva. It's a dog's life. He's here. We'll be right back. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes raw dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. From food ingredients that are gently dehydrated to remove only the moisture, yet retain most of the natural nutrients. Everyone knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious, and Lucy at The Honest Kitchen developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist cats and dogs with chronic health problems like itchy skin, ear infections, and GI GI upset, which are often linked to a poor quality or inappropriate diet. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com for information about calling the Honest Kitchen for a complimentary consultation to find out which recipe is right for your pet and get free samples. This show is supported by the pheromone products Feel Away for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that replicate a signal of comfort in your pet's brain. And veterinary nutritionists often recommend Feel Away and Adaptil to help patients with behavior issues as a stress reliever that can help solve many common behavior challenges or even emotional discomfort you may not recognize. Feel Away for cats and Adaptil for dogs can also be comforting for newly adopted cats and dogs from stressful backgrounds, and especially for new puppies and kittens experiencing the fear and loneliness of leaving their litters. Feel Away diffusers and spray for cats help with feline behavior issues in a multi-cat household for out-of-litter box issues and to get a cat used to her carrier for travel or vet visits. Adaptil for dogs helps alleviate anxiety and stress-related symptoms whether your dog is at home, in a car, or out in the world. Adaptil comes in a diffuser, spray, and the most effective way, a collar. Veterinary animal behaviorists often recommend Feel Away and Adaptil to help patients with behavior issues. You can find the pheromone products through the link at RadioPetLady.com, where there's a discount to Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. VaxaCheck wants to know, are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? But is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxaCheck takes the worry out of keeping your dog safe. Avoid the risks of automatically revaccinating by asking for VaxaCheck, a blood titer test done right in your veterinarian's office while you wait. It shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases, distemper, parvovirus, and hepatitis. If she has the antibodies in her blood, you don't need to revaccinate. But if she doesn't have protective immunity to one of the diseases, then you revaccinate only against that one illness. VaxaCheck should be used on every puppy to confirm that she actually got the protective antibodies from her puppy shots, which are not guaranteed to be 100% effective. Shelters and rescues should use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. For your dog's safety and your peace of mind, ask for a VaxaCheck test at your dog's yearly checkup so you and your vet make the best decision about long-term health. VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon. We are back, Greg Kleva. It's A Dog's Life. We are delighted to be here for the first time ever, our virgin show. Greg, talk a little about being middle of the road. What do you mean by that? Like sort of some detail about how, I don't know if you want to use an example of a, I think it's useful for people if you say, here's the situation I have with a dog and here's how I dealt with it. And then people can imagine what you mean in a very specific situation if you can think of one.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned before that, you know, with that harder side of training, that Cesar Millan type of approach, that a physical correction or physically dominating a dog can diminish an otherwise trusting relationship that you want to have with your pet.
Yes.
The unfortunate thing is, as we all know, very unfortunate that you can beat a dog and the dog will come groveling back and go, I'm sorry that I made you beat me, and will still love you. You know, that's the amazing thing about dogs. But that's not the right way to train. on the other end of the
that's
spectrum.
That's fair to say.
On the other side, it's, you know, that softer side, you know, clickers and treats and that positive only training, I don't think gets you the respect that you need to get from your dog from time to time. So, again, I think a middle of the road approach is better. You know, the positive only ignores the unwanted behavior. So if your dog is jumping on you, for example, you suggested I use an example. For a dog that jumps up on you or on your visitors, you know, a positive-only trainer will simply turn their back and ignore that behavior, thinking that any attention I give the dog in this situation is good attention. So they'll turn their back and they'll ignore. And then when the dog sits, they'll pop a cookie in the dog's mouth. So, you know, try that with a 100-pound Rottweiler or,
that's
you know,
right.
a dog that just won't stop jumping. You won't get very far very fast in a lot of situations. So, and, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to teach the dog a different behavior. I'm not trying to teach him to sit. I'm trying to teach
right.
him not to jump. I'm trying to. So it's all about the outcome or the consequence of the behavior. But in any event, you know, the way that I train, it's based on relationship and on creating a two-way balance of respect and trust and the love and affection. That's important too. So it's based on teaching a dog to think and make good choices on his own, to make good decisions on his own. Like I said, not based on creating new behaviors. It's, you know, you clear up that confusion and that anxiety by appealing to the canine psychology. And again, listeners are going to hear me talk a ton about, like I said, seeing things from their dog's perspective and understanding the psychology of an animal that thinks completely differently than we do, and meeting the dog at that level, because ultimately that's what's going to clear up the confusion and enhance the relationship. So
confusion,
again,
for the confusion for the dog, and sometimes confusion for the owner, who, as you said, has read a book, heard something from his neighbor, did something with a different dog 20 years ago.
Exactly.
And doesn't really know how to get a message across clearly and effectively. Always.
And exactly. You know, the communication is sometimes off. And again, that's something that I pride myself on, is being able to get people to communicate effectively with their dogs. So it's like, you know, I don't believe that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Once you start to get the information across to the dog in a way the dog understands, it's like the dog goes, this is what you've been trying to tell me all these years. You know, so I've trained dogs that are...
Why didn't you say so?
Yeah. I have trained dogs that are 12, 14 years old, and they do perfectly fine, you know, once you appeal to that canine psychology. So, you know, the method that I like is more of a holistic or a whole dog in its approach. It's not just about sit, stay, heal, come when you're called. That stuff's important, but I like to take into consideration that nutrition, relationship, the dog's environment, physical and mental exercise, physical and mental stimulation are really the foundations for having that well-balanced, well-behaved dog. So, you know, I also prefer alternative solutions or remedies that, and I recommend those to dog owners as opposed to, you know, some of the more conventional and pharmaceutical alternatives, which I know is kind of a good fit with what you talk about and what Dr. Sean and a lot of the other experts on the network
right.
here are talking
right.
about.
But yeah, not to go to tranquilizers or antidepressants, which really are completely irrelevant for a dog's brain and a dog's personality.
Exactly. And all this said, I want to make it clear for listeners that I'm not a veterinarian. I can't dispense medical advice. If your dog's having a health issue, I'm not really qualified to do that. I do know how nutrition plays a part in behavior, but I'm not an expert nutritionist. You will hear
me. We have those on the network. So
exactly.
If somebody has those questions and they want to ask a holistic veterinary question, they talk to Dr. Sean and me on a Tuesday night cat chat and dog talk. We have a board certified internist giving second opinions on medical on Mondays, the expert vet, who also is holistic in her approach. And now we have Dr. Sean Delaney, whose show was on before yours, Pet Food Advisors, who really, I mean, he has so many degrees in pet nutrition. It's amazing.
That's what's great about the network is, we, you know, listeners have a place to reach out and get this information. And again, in addition to what I do. So again, kind of back to that middle of the road training, where I will correct a dog if it makes a mistake or if it ignores a request. And if you look at it from the from the scientific perspective of operant conditioning, you know, again, we've been using the term here today, and people hear it all the time, positive reinforcement. Well, there's also positive punishment. There's negative reinforcement. There's negative punishment. I don't want to get overly
right.
complicated or scientific here, but, you know, so that we will correct a behavior, like I said, in a way that's firm but fair, never physical. So for that dog that's jumping on you or jumping on your visitors, you know, we'll give it that growly verbal correction that you mentioned before, Tracy, that a good growly no, or we growl at the dog, bah, to let the dog know, hey, I disapprove of that behavior. There's a negative consequence. Negative
right.
consequence positive punishment, again, if you're looking at operant conditioning, people don't like that word punishment, but that's a matter of semantics. Punishment doesn't mean that it has to hurt or that it has to create pain or fear. It's just a negative, something that's meaningfully negative for the dog. So if a growl is enough to get the dog to go, oop, sorry about that, and the feet hit the floor, then you use your positive reinforcement.
Right.
Good boy, good puppy. So what the dog is learning is, well, when my feet are up, you don't like that. You communicated that to me effectively. When my feet are on the floor, you give me tons of love and affection. So I choose to keep my feet on the floor because better things happen when my feet are on the floor. So, you know, I use a correction. I use good body language. I talk about using simple tones. And sometimes with the reinforcement of a training aid, people will sometimes hear me talk about reinforcing that growl with a water squirter or a noisemaker or something along those lines. I don't condone, and I know this is where we differ a little bit, Tracy, you and I don't condone the use of shock collars, mainly because if they're not used properly, they can cause problems and create pain, but also because I just don't have the experience. I've never used them, so I just don't condone their use, but I won't use prong collars or chokers. I, like I said, I don't pin dogs down or scruff them or push them or hit them or poke them or kick them or grab them. You know, my goal is not to create pain or fear, but to create awareness, to create focus so that I can, you know, get the dog's attention and then guide it towards an appropriate behavior, like the feet on the floor, and then use lots of praise, not necessarily treats, but just vocal, verbal praise, again, effective tone, to reinforce that good behavior.
Well, in terms of e-collars, electronic collars, that's definitely a conversation for a whole show of its own.
Yeah.
And the proper use of it is not to correct problems. That's not what they were originally intended for. They were intended for hunting dogs to be able to be recalled at a great distance. And it was really just, as Martin Dealey says, a tap on the shoulder. It'd be fun sometime to get Amy Sadler or Allison Denley, who's the official dog trainer of Dog Talk and who taught me how to use an e-collar for beach walking with dogs that can't hear you and sometimes can't even see you, to come back. But it'd be interesting because it fits in really – it doesn't even fit into the conversation you're having because it's to be used on a dog that already has commands.
Yeah, I only bring it up
instead of commands.
Yeah, I only bring it up because there are trainers out there that will use it as a correction device, which
is – and that's not what it's meant to be doing.
Absolutely.
But then again, there's people that will use prong collars, and Allison Denley, who's the official trainer of Dog Talk, thinks that there is a place for them. Now, I see people use prong collars. If you guys don't know what they are, it's a choke chain that has a series of interlocking pieces of – how would you put it, Greg?
Teeth
that when you pull, it digs teeth like claws into the dog's neck. And I've seen it on people that simply have never taught a dog to walk properly on a leash. Leave aside heel. The dog's pulling the whole time. So even with these claws in its neck, like bear claws, it's pulling the whole time.
Right.
I've seen it on a Weimaraner. I'm like, unbelievable. It's like skin like silk, so delicate. And the dog eventually becomes, I guess, deadened to it. Like anyone who knows about horse training and horses' mouths, some horses have such a sensitive mouth, you can ride them in a hackamore, no bit in their mouth at all. Other horses, you go from a snaffle to incredibly complicated bits that would cause terrible pain and even damage to the mouth of a soft-mouthed horse. But to a hard-mouthed horse, they barely feel it. And I think that sort of fits in with dogs and a high pain tolerance in some dogs, also an insensitivity to your negativity. Now, I had a golden retriever. If I said to her, "Roma," just that, she would be mortified.
Mom,
Greg.
I'm sorry.
Mortified, mortified. When she would go for walks with me, I lived in California at the time, she would always stay on the sidewalk. She traveled the whole world with me. She knew to stop at the corner, and she did. But if she, even just on the sidewalk, got too far ahead of me and I told her back, I didn't use the word heel. It didn't have to be the perfect head at the left knee. It was just always stay with me. I would take the choke chain, a normal old-fashioned choke chain, that slip collar they now call it, but it's a choke chain, and I would just take it out of my pocket. She would have no leash and say, "Do you want to wear this, Roma?" I swear to God, the dog went into the most perfect heel. Golden retrievers can be so sensitive and so clever. So a dog like that is like the softest of dogs. You not only would never do anything harsh, you can't even talk in a cranky tone of voice.
Yeah.
Other dogs, you could do anything to them and they're like, "I don't care that you're annoyed. I don't care that you, you know, like tied me on a short leash and made me walk this way. So what?"
Yeah, you bring up a couple of really good points, which again, these could both be topics for entire shows. You know, equipment, first and foremost, you talked about the prong collar and how some dogs are desensitized to them. It's, you know, I look at equipment and I don't care what method of training you're using. If it's, a prong collar or clicker and treats or a middle of the road method, if you're not educating while you're using equipment, if you're just using equipment to manage the situation and using it for control, the dog's not going to learn what behavior you want it to exhibit.
Exactly. Anyway. And as you said, you want the dog to make decisions on his own, to make good choices. And if you've got a prong collar that's hurting and holding him back, he's not deciding anything. He's just reacting. We're going to come right back after the break and finish up on this, the conversation of the different kinds of collars, because I'm sure you advocate all different kinds depending on the size and kind of energy level and stuff of the dog. There's no one fix. We'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals in any of their products. Halo is a private company partially owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they genuinely are dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy inside and out. The company emphasizes giving back by making impressive charitable donations through freekibble.com to shelters and rescues because they believe that less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition too. Halo is the only kibble I feed my own dogs because Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no scary mystery ingredients that are permitted in rendered meal. There are even shreds of real vegetables along with the dry nuggets. It's why I'd love you to try Halo too. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Nordic Naturals has been providing people around the world with high-quality omega-3 oils for decades, with third-party testing for purity and freshness. Research has shown that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in omega-3 oils, and daily supplementation helps maintain optimal health for all members of the family. In fact, Nordic's prenatal DHA and baby's DHA products are endorsed by the American Pregnancy Association, which is a welcome endorsement for those who will want to add omega-3 fish oil to their pet's bowl since they view their cats and dogs as their fur kids. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family. For more information, visit RadioPetLady.com. This show is part of the Radio Pet Lady Network, the best pet radio shows in the world. If you're enjoying our show, please go to RadioPetLady.com to see all the other live call-in shows I co-host. Wednesday is Dog Travel Experts, exploring all the ways to get out of the house with your dog from around the block to around the world with Paris from Dog Tipper. Also on Wednesday is Four-Legged Life with Arden Moore, who advocates great ways to enjoy life with your dogs and cats while keeping them safe. Thursday is Pet Food Advisors with Dr. Sean Delaney, a famous veterinary nutritionist with advice about what to feed your pets. And then it's A Dog's Life, discussing dog behavior with trainer Greg Kleva. Mondays, there's The Expert Vet with Dr. Donna, giving second opinions on hard-to-treat medical problems, and Cat Crazy with Amy Shojai, who is a certified animal behaviorist who is crazy about cats. If you cannot listen to any show live, just send your questions to RadioPetLady@gmail.com and we'll answer them on the air. You can listen later to the after-show podcast in the library at RadioPetLady.com. Greg, I have a question to ask you before we go back to callers. I'm thinking about your little min pin. What's his name?
Snickers. Little Mr. Snickers.
Little Mr. Snickers. How do you explain a dog with a high fear level about something where you had him since he was a baby?
I did.
So here this dog's never had a bad experience. He's been raised by a gentle, kind, clear-minded owner. And yet there's this area of terror. Do you think this is hardwired? Is it genetic?
I love
this
question.
Is it like the nervous system of this dog is just always going to be, I don't know, but that word balance is overused. But do you know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean. And I love the question. I always look at nature versus nurture. So yes, sometimes dogs are just born so fearful, so afraid in certain situations. And it can be – it's like the little kid that hides behind mom's legs when they meet somebody new.
Yes.
They're kind of afraid
yes.
of strangers. And, you know, as humans, we can kind of outgrow that. And we have the ability to reason that dogs don't necessarily have, or at least not at the same level as we – as humans do. So some dogs are born that way. There's also the nurture side, which is so important and which I talk about a lot on the air, which is that those critical periods of a dog's life where what they experience within the first 6 to 9 months of their lives as puppies, even one negative experience can stick with them for their entire lives. And they may never get over it no matter how much good training and positive association you do. So little Mr. Snickers, when he was a puppy, was at the veterinarian and was getting his nails cut. And those of you who have tried to cut your dog's own nails know that there's a vein in that nail, the quick, which is referred to. And if you cut it, it's very painful for the dog. So I believe that when he was younger, when he was at the veterinarian, and depending on the veterinarian that you go to, sometimes they take the dog in the back room and who knows
they do. They hold him very tight, a vet tech will hold, and maybe they're rushed and they're a little quick and a little harsh.
Yeah. So I think he had a negative experience at a young age, and he's had a hard time getting through that. So, again, it's that nature versus nurture.
Yeah. So that's what happened to him. He had that one bad experience. And like some grown-ups and some children on the human side, some people can have so many horrible things happen in their life and they just let it ride off over them and they get on with it. Other people can be damaged for life from something that would seem minor to you and me and they never get over it. So
very true.
We can say that about dogs, that how much they're individuals. And so each one has to really be looked at as an individual case. And that's why people need to work with a dog trainer. There is no one Band-Aid or one explanation that fits all. It really depends on that dog's temperament, the stage of his life, and how you interact with them. I am such a believer that people need to work with a trainer even one or two times if things seem to be going in the wrong direction. You talked about body language. I think next week let's talk about body language. People always bend over when they're trying to train. They never just stand up straight and tall. But now we're out of time. I'd love to talk body language next time.
Next week, it's one of the most important ways to communicate with your dog, for sure.
Awesome. Body language next week. Greg Kleva, you are the bomb. Talk to you then.
Thanks, Tracy.
Kisses, hug your pooches. That was really fun. Thanks a lot.